I'm Brian Moline. Wes Moore is the author of the 2010 bestseller, The Other Wes Moore, One Name, Two Fates, which examines the lives of the author and another man of the same name. They both grew up in Baltimore without a father and shared many other similarities. But this Wes Moore went on to become a Rhodes Scholar and decorated Army veteran, while the other Wes Moore is serving a life sentence in prison. Wes Moore is speaking tonight on the University of Illinois' Urbana campus at the Illini Union as part of the university's One Book, One Campus program. I spoke with Moore about tonight's appearance and asked him why this book has resonated so much with readers.
I think people realize that it's not just about these two kids. You know, it's not about one neighborhood. It's not about one socioeconomic group. It's not about one generation or one race. It's about all of us. And it's about the decisions that we're making and tantamount to that, the people who we have in our lives who help us to make those decisions. And I think the one thing that people notice is that, no matter who you are, what your background is, or anything along those lines, we have all had those people in our lives who have helped us and who have guided us and who have informed our decisions. And that line is really thin between our life and someone else's life. And I think that's the point that's really resonated with people.
There were so many similarities between you and the other Wes. Why do you think it is that you ultimately made it out of a difficult upbringing and became successful while the other Wes ended up in prison?
You know, I think one of the things I really wanted to explore with this is and one of the things I learned from it was that there really was no single thing, you know, and I wish it was that simple where it's like, okay, if we just do this, then everything's going to be fine. But I think that all of our lives is really, it's a complicated marriage of personal responsibility along with societal responsibility that we do have an obligation to support one another, and that as individuals we have that obligation to actually take those supports seriously. And to understand these stories, you have to understand the role of family and faith and education and housing and policy and all those kind of things, but you also have to understand the role of expectations, both the expectations we had of ourselves and also the expectations that society had of us.
What about second chances? I'm curious your thoughts on that. How big of a difference can just getting a second chance make in someone's life?
I think second chances are a huge deal. It's important that we provide second chances, and we don't just say that. We don't just provide lip service to it, but we genuinely believe in what second chances are and what they can provide. And I think then as individuals, it's important that we take second chances seriously and that we understand that second chances do become last chances at some point. And so I think that it's really understanding where that balance strikes, but making sure that second chances can become realities for people.
What was an example of a second chance that you got in your own life that really made a big difference for you?
Oh, gosh. Where do I begin? I mean, you know, and that's the thing. I don't think it's even just, just the old life, right? I think we get second chances all the time. And I think those second chances sometimes show themselves as luck. I think second chances, you know, sometimes show themselves as privilege and advantage. That we get that other people don't get. So I don't even think it's just an old life thing, but I think that what we have to do is recognize that those things are omnipresent around us. Sometimes, you know, they're tough to recognize because we just take them for granted, but see them for what they are, and they are second chances, and they are luck, and they are blessings, and they are gifts, and really respect them as such.
We just passed the one-year anniversary of the death of Freddie Gray, and the trial of one of the police officers in that case has just gotten underway. As someone who grew up in Baltimore, I'm curious to get your thoughts on the Freddie Gray case, how that's impacted the city of Baltimore, and maybe even the broader issue of police and race.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, you know, to understand, you know, what happened to Freddie Gray is horrific, you know, because I don't, it doesn't matter where anyone stands on it. You know, the truth is that, you know, a person was arrested and an hour later they were in a coma. And I think it becomes our responsibility to make sure that the tragedy of Freddie Gray never has to happen again. At the same time, we also have to understand that the challenge of Freddie Gray and Freddie Gray's life did not just take place in April of last year. You know, Freddie Gray, as a young child, had lead poisoning. Freddie Gray, as a young child, you know, lived in communities and environments that were historically and chronically neglected. So, you know, when we look at the video of Freddie Gray getting arrested, you know, I tell people, you know, it's important to see Freddie, and it's important to see law enforcement and all that kind of stuff, and to know that while law enforcement have an incredibly difficult job, it's important that we're making sure that the training of them and, you know, how we put them in the field matters. But it's also important to understand when you look at that video, don't just look at Freddie Gray or the officers. It's important also to look at the environment, you know, look at the community, look at the neighborhood, look at the buildings in which that arrest was taking place. Look at the fact that that arrest took place at 9:17 in the morning and how many people were just standing around, not on their way to school, not on their way to work. So if we're not clear about all the other conditions that are existing, that are creating environments where people just don't feel like they're part of a collective conversation, it's going to be very difficult to think that simply solving or addressing one facet is then going to increase levels of hope inside of communities that in many cases have felt hopeless.
In addition to being a best-selling author, I know that one of your programs right now is the Bridge EDU program. I know that's something very near and dear to you. What's the goal of that program?
Yeah, the goal of Bridge EDU is really what we say is we want to address the college completion crisis by reinventing the freshman year of college. Because one thing that we notice in all collegiate numbers is that in many ways we don't have a college completion crisis, even though people can look at it and say, well, it's amazing that that literally half of people that start college will not finish, will not get a degree. You look at Baltimore City as an example, two-thirds of Baltimore City high school graduates 6 years after finishing high school will have no form of post-secondary credentialing. Community college, four-year college, trade school, nothing. But if you dig even deeper into those numbers, you realize that 34% of students, all students, that start college every single year will not make it past their freshman year. So we don't have a college completion crisis in many ways. We have a college freshman year crisis. And really what we say is that if the choke point seems to be the freshman year, then how do we work to reinvent the freshman? So we're adding in technologies. We're adding in services and supports, tutoring, mentoring. We're adding in career exploration. We're adding in things that can make the college process not just provide academic momentum, but make the entire process a bit stickier.
And how is it going so far? How's the program progressing?
We are so excited about how well the students are performing and how quickly our growth is taking place. You know, right now we started off with one school in Baltimore. We're now we have to five schools with the state of Maryland, and we're planning on growing out, you know, around the country after that. And so we're really thankful that that we're not only able to support the students who we're working with, but we're also able to support so many of these colleges and universities who realize that if they don't do a better job of addressing attrition at their schools, not only is it a strike to their moral capacity, but it's a strike to their business model.
One final question for you, Mr. Moore. What message are you hoping to convey to those who hear you speak at the Illini Student Union tonight?
I want students to understand that, you know, that their collegiate process and their academics there are important, but it's not going to be everything. You know, how they're remembered, how they're defined, how their experience is measured is going to be so much about what they're doing to build out a better and a more just society. That the academic components are really important, but the academic components in isolation are not enough. And so I just want people to understand that we have a collective responsibility to make sure that we're involved and engaged in the lives of others, and that we can continue pushing a level of responsibility that could that actually is lasting.
Wes Moore, thank you very much for your time today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.